Mormon Matters Podcast is a production of the Open Stories Foundation and is seeking to build financial support separate from Mormon Stories Podcast. All donations to Mormon Matters are fully tax deductible and go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for Mormons like you. To support the podcast or to join the community, please become a monthly subscriber today at mormonmatters.org.
Another edition of the Mormon Matters Podcast. This is your host, Dan Weatherspoon. Last June, I decided to do a series, and I ended up only doing one for it so far, but it's a series I want to call Encountering Other Traditions, and it kind of celebrates the nice thing that happens when we are familiar with our own religion, plus at least one other. And especially if we're not only familiar with it, but we have empathy towards it, we've kind of have done the work to where there's an inside position that we can also occupy besides our own home tradition, whatever that might be. I found it to be so helpful when I studied other religions. I got to know Mormonism so much better, and I know it happens in reverse as well. I know it happens with language. It was when I studied Latin and Greek that I understood English better and things like this. And so the comparative enterprise is really important and really wonderful. And I thought we'd get this series rolling a little bit more than we did. I let it drop last June, and it's time to get it going. And so this time we're going to take on Catholicism and kind of talk with some people who are Mormons who have Catholic backgrounds, as well as a Catholic who has a strong interest and who's been studying and even contributing to Mormon discussions for the last 10 years. So I've got Fiona Givens and Mark de St. Alban, and then Matt Schmaltz. And so Fiona and Mark are the two who are LDS and have strong Catholic backgrounds, and Matt's our scholar he teaches at a Catholic university and studies Mormonism on the side, teaches classes and things too. So thrilled to have all three of you. Fiona, can I just start with you? You've been on the podcast a few times. Would you quickly introduce or reintroduce yourself to our listeners?
Oh, yes, I'd be delighted to. I'm Fiona Givens. I'm probably best known for co-authoring with my husband the books The God Who Weeps and The Crucible of Doubt, but we've collaborated on all of the books he's produced. So yeah, that's me really.
And you live in Virginia, and
yes,
you're just active, speaking a lot of Mormon things.
Become
an important voice.
So thank you.
We're grateful to have you, and we'll hear more about your journey here in a bit. Mark, you've been on the podcast once before. You were with Jana Reese about gospel burnout.
Oh, yeah, that was fun. Hope we didn't burn out the listeners. But
not even. I actually, the primary president of my ward listened to that. She told me about it about 2 weeks ago and really had enjoyed it.
That's great.
So kind of fun. So tell us a little bit about your background, if you would.
Well, I currently am on the faculty of the College of Social Work at the University of Utah. I've been a social work associate professor lecturer for about 20 years, and prior to that I practiced in medical social work with hospice and older adults, and I've been a Salt Lake resident for, oh my goodness, probably about 30 years, coming up on 30 some years. I've got a wife and two kids, and I'm a beekeeper and enjoy life.
Awesome. Fun. Beekeeping. That's interesting. I'll have to learn more about that from you sometime.
Well, it's the Beehive State. You know, we have to.
Oh, hello. Yes, it is. Good for you. Matt Schmaltz, tell us about your life and a little bit about your background.
Yeah, I teach at the College of the Holy Cross, which is a Jesuit undergraduate liberal arts college in Worcester, Massachusetts, and I teach comparative religions, and I have my PhD in the history of religions from the University of Chicago, and my primary areas of scholarly expertise are Hinduism and Catholicism, actually. I lived in India and Pakistan and Sri Lanka for 4 years total, but I became interested in Mormonism and study about Mormonism and teach Mormonism, and we just finished reading The God Who Weeps in my Mormonism class, and students liked it very much. And I'm very pleased to have been christened last week at UVU a Morlick, that is a Mormon Catholic. So it's one of the greatest compliments I've ever received. And so I'm happy to introduce myself as a professor of religions, a husband, a father, but also a Morlick.
Love it, my friend. Yes, I should have mentioned that in the little introduction. At UVU, Utah Valley University, just had a conference with Mormons and Catholics in dialogue, and Matt was one of the stars of that, and we loved to have him. And so I'm sure that'll be online soon, and when it comes online, I'll make sure to link to it here at the website. But Morlick, I love it. Okay, Fiona, are you a Morlick too? Are you? I guess you would. I wonder how that would work when you were Catholic and now you've...
I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm a Morlick or a
Calf-moan or something.
Might be Calf-more.
Anyway. Hey, would you... you've told off and on a little bit about your story, but would you tell us about your Catholic background and maybe a little bit of, you know, get into at least some of the transition to converting to Mormonism?
Yeah, no, absolutely. My mother is Irish from Southern Ireland, and she married my father, who is English Protestant, at a time where it was mandatory if there was a mixed marriage that the children be raised Catholic. And I am very grateful for that, actually. So I attended Catholic schools all of my life, Catholic girls' schools. And the last 4 years, my high school years, I was... in Newhall School for it was called Ladies at the time, and it was run by the Nuns of the Holy Sepulchre in England, in Essex, just outside of Chelmsford. And so I was pretty much steeped in Catholicism all of my life. Love the religion. It's so beautiful, aesthetically pleasing on almost every level, well, every level, I think. When I was 19, I went through a crisis. Things just hadn't worked out particularly well for me as far as studies and one thing or another, but it was the first time in my life actually where I had actually seriously prayed to God. God had always been an amenable person for me in Catholicism. I felt a very deep, close relationship to him, and sort of my prayers of desperation in that London little Catholic church near my home were raised almost every day, and I ended up in Germany in a little village called Elfiller, not far from Wiesbaden, and met there a woman who was happy to talk about God and things divine with me, which was wonderful because that really was uppermost in my mind. She turned out to be Mormon, and she took me to it was a room on the second floor in Wiesbaden, and I felt something there I had not felt in my life before, a sense of real community bonded by spirit, I think you could say that. And so I agreed to, study Mormonism. The two young men were terribly good looking. It was hard to say no. And I said they could come and talk to me about anything they liked, actually.
Yeah.
Can't resist a man in uniform with a name tag. But, it was delightful. This is Frankfurt. You know, people don't join the Mormon Church in Europe, let alone in Germany. So
right.
There were lots of missionaries involved. They were very grateful to have something to do. But I can only really describe my experience as Pentecostal, really. But when, it came time to tell my parents, I thought they'd be thrilled. I thought I was taking a step in the right direction. And it's quite clear from their response that they were horrified. They were absolutely horrified. And I realized that if I were to take this step, and I love my family deeply, that the communication, which wasn't brilliant, but at least we enjoyed some sort of communication, would be absolutely abolished. It was an extraordinarily difficult decision for me to make. And at the end of the day, so I didn't. I turned down my baptismal invitation and spent about 6 months really wrestling with this decision. And then, Shakespeare came to my rescue. He generally does. And I kept thinking that I was above all to thine own self be true. So I simply couldn't deny the Pentecostal experience. Something transformative had happened in my life. And I lacked the courage to go forward. And so eventually I was baptized. I was a very wobbly convert, very insecure. There were some lovely families who helped bolster me along the way. But
And this is still in Germany?
Yeah, this is in Germany. Okay. This is still in Germany. Okay. And so that's it, really. My Catholic roots are very deep. I think that is true for anybody of any religion, quite frankly. The earth in which one's religious roots are set, and so I think for everyone, uprooting themselves from their religious tradition is painful, and can be extraordinarily destructive, actually. So I've maintained my Catholicism. When I return to England, I am a frequent guest at the Church of Our Most Holy Redeemer and St. Thomas More in Chelsea, where I listen to beautiful homilies, articulate, elegant, sensitive, by Father John Hema. And it's my mass. It's a Catholic mass. It's Latin. It's sung. And there is lots of incense. So I do go back and I water my roots. So I find myself fairly comfortable in both traditions.
That is wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. And we'll come back and talk a little bit more about, you know, what still you've maintained, you know, into your Mormon life, and how, you know, it doesn't influence what you see, you know, in Mormonism, and vice versa, you know, how Mormonism influences what you see in Catholicism. But thanks for that great start.
Yeah, welcome.
Mark, would you do something similar and just tell a little bit about your journey, your background roots, as well as a little bit getting you into the Mormon circle?
Sure. As a boy, I lived in a small town in northwest Indiana, and was part of, as the youngest of three, and grew up in a very Catholic home where we prayed together as a family, and we were devotional in terms of our attendance to Mass. When I entered school, I was entered into St. Mary's Catholic school there in Griffith, Indiana, and had nuns and others teaching me. My own family background, actually, I have an aunt who is a nun, another cousin, a nun, who we were close to, and a first cousin who was a Catholic priest. And it was just expected, you know, that we would all be devoted and faithful members of the Catholic faith. After my father's death, when I was 11, we all moved down. My mom and my sibs and I moved down to Florida, where I continued not at a Catholic school, but went to a public school, but attended catechism. And that was an interesting experience. Just a different parish, but I continued to participate. Actually, when I was a boy, I was an altar boy, and as I got older in high school, I became what's called in Catholic practice a lector, just as my father had been. I think all through my life, I've wanted to be a participant of my faith. In fact, I remember after my father's death, my mom and I would go every Friday and participate in the Stations of the Cross there in our Catholic parish in Indiana. And I've always felt a special reverence and spirit with devotional practices like the Rosary, Catholic prayers, the Stations of the Cross. And I continued those practices into my high school years. But I always knew there was something stirring inside of me, and I wanted more. I remember just within myself saying, you know, I know there's more truth, more spirit. And so I would read books like, I remember reading J.B. Phillips' book, Your God is Too Small. And when I was a high school senior, I started practicing transcendental meditation, still as an active Catholic. Then I attended Florida State University, and still was a very participative Catholic, and I was a lector again with going up and participating with the mass, accompanying the priest and the altar boys, reading from the pulpit, the first two readings of the Catholic mass liturgy. And so I loved that, and I still have much just warm feelings about that, how I felt close to God through the devotional practices of my Catholic background. Concurrent with being a freshman at Florida State, I explored other ways. I became a vegetarian, and I just kind of life, the world opened up, and I bumped into a couple Mormon missionaries, and they came over and wanted to teach me about the Book of Mormon, and I was kind of curious. And so meanwhile, I was still a practicing Catholic and lector and a TM, Transcendental Meditation practitioner. So I kind of had this potpourri of spiritual practices. And so it didn't bother me to look into Mormonism or to be curious and read the Book of Mormon. And I think a turning point happened, maybe similar to Fiona's experience, when I attended a Latter-day Saint service there at the student ward, as it's called, student congregation there on Florida State University campus. And I actually began to feel things that I had not felt before, an affinity, a yearning, perhaps. And so my shift from curiosity changed from curiosity into more of a serious study. And so for the next, I guess, probably 2 months, I would read and pray and follow the missionaries who were teaching me their invitation to really, ask the question, is this message of God? Is it true? Does God want you to embrace this? And after a time of prayer and actually fasting, I felt a spiritual desire and affinity, I guess, with the Mormon message. And I was baptized February of 1977. And that afternoon, I went to tell the Monsignor. I was still scheduled to participate in the Mass as a lector the following day after I'd been baptized a Mormon. And so I thought I probably ought to, unfortunately, I probably should have talked to him and not blindsided him, because he was really a friend of mine. We were close. And so I guess I sensed that it would offend. So anyway, I did share the news, and he was actually quite magnanimous and large-hearted about it. He said, "You know what you feel to do, you know, find God in your way," and I respected him for that. So that was my journey into
Mormonism. Did you end up doing officiating that day?
No, I probably didn't. I would have read from the prophet Nephi if I would, and that would have stirred things. No, I don't know. I didn't officiate as a lector that day. I gave up the responsibility, but I did feel a closeness with him and have some misgivings about perhaps how I sprung that on him. But that was my journey.
How about your family? Fiona talked a little bit about that being a real hurdle for her.
You know, it's interesting. My mother and my brother and sister, older than I, felt, okay, he'd done TM, he'd become a vegetarian. Okay, Mormonism, I'll give it a couple months, you know. And then, but my mother was brokenhearted, actually. It was really hard for her. And it was a source. She actually thought I was going to come home. When I told her I had some news, she thought I was going to come home and tell her I was wanting to become a Catholic priest, because I did have some yearnings in that direction as a young adolescent to consider being a priest, entering the priesthood, as many or others in my family had taken vows. So it was a shake-up in my family. The nuns and the priests in my family, however, were more accepting, interestingly enough.
Interesting. Yeah. Now, Mark, Matt, definitely want to talk about you for a second, but I want to ask Fiona and Mark something real quick. Both of you, you know, you moved from one tradition to another, and you said it was a feeling of something special there at the Mormon Church. Do you really? I know that anything fresh and new, you know, kind of excites me, you know, type thing. And I don't want to like deny that the Holy Spirit can be present in Mormon meetings. I'm not saying that at all. But do you think in some ways it's like a natural thing where like, oh, there are actually other lenses to look through. There are actually other ways to worship, and sort of the newness and the freshness maybe unplugged something in you? Fiona, anything like that is a possibility?
No, it's not even a possibility, Dan. I wasn't looking for another faith tradition. I was proud of being Catholic, and as far as I was concerned, we won because we were the oldest.
Oh, I see.
We were the oldest faith tradition, you know, on the market, in the Christian market. So, I think that was important for me. I refused to allow the missionaries to teach with any music at all. So all of those lovely little slide things they had with lovely little music going on in the background, you know, I didn't watch any of those because I recognize how manipulative music can be, and I did not want to be manipulated. So it wasn't that at all. It really was something, and I think that's probably what actually steadied my feet at the end of the day. This was something completely new and unexpected and extremely powerful. And quite honestly, I think it needed to be to encourage me to move, because I had no intention of leaving Catholicism. I thought I was being broad-minded. I thought, well, I've never heard of this faith tradition, and I think this would be rather an adventure. In fact, I'll start with Mormonism, and then I'll go on and explore the other religious faith traditions and see where they err. So for me, it needed to be a sort of extraordinary to move me. I just simply, after my family collapsed under the weight of my decision, I collapsed also, and it needed to be in order to give me the courage, quite frankly, to move. But it's so interesting because I was baptized in 1977 as well. It's a couple of months after you. So it's we've got more in common. I mean, it's all very exciting. There must be something going on with conversions and Catholicism that particular year.
Perhaps. I think, my experience. Yeah, I think, it's interesting. I think there are some things that particularly touched me and moved me by the Mormon message. And I think one was that we could become, that we are on a process to become very much like God. And I have since learned it rang so true to me that we are on a divine path, that it rang so true that it was very, very moving. And I have since found out that that's in my Catholic tradition as well, that the early, patristic fathers taught the same doctrine, if you will, that we are on a process of partaking of the divine nature. And I think that really stirred in me when I learned that about within the LDS faith. And there was some newness to it, but I think I'd had a lot of new stuff
already,
already. There was a quality of what I felt at the time was God's spirit that was speaking to me. And it's interesting. I since talked to other friends and I say, I've never stopped seeking. And so contrasting Fiona's experience, I was a seeker. But I still am, I feel, even though I've embraced the Latter-day Saint message of the restored gospel, I still seek, and I seek it from outside the church. I seek, I feel like we're wired. We are like musical instruments that resonate to truth and spiritual truth. And when I feel that inside of me. I like to be responsive to that wherever it is. And right. That was what I felt.
Yeah, and just jumping into that, I think, you know, I think, Mark, what you're saying is so absolutely true, and it that was Joseph's worldview. You know, mm-hmm. he was constantly saying, you know, go out into the world, find truth, mm-hmm. You know, get all of the good in the world you can if you want to come out a good Latter-day Saint. You know, the Presbyterians and the Baptists, mm-hmm. Methodists of truth, embrace it. Get right. all the good in the world. You know, so it really is a fundamental tenet. And then in his Sermon of July the 9th, 1843, one of the grand fundamentals of Mormonism is to receive truth, that it come from whence it may. So you're absolutely right. We are on right. this, and it's so much bigger, I think, than perhaps we have understood before. But mm-hmm. you know, I feel you're right. I feel that I am now wired, because I'm a much more humble person than I was in my, and it has nothing to do with the Catholic tradition. It's just me. But this idea of, you know, really looking, you know, looking all the time, seeking truth wherever mm-hmm. I can find it. And it's just a glorious journey.
Very much.
Oh, thank you, you guys. That was fun little extra there. Matt, tell us about your upbringing. I don't even know if you've been Catholic from birth, so you'll have to tell us that part. And I guess when it comes to, maybe it's a, when did your interest in Mormonism right. develop, somewhere in your college career or something. So talk away, okay, brother. We'd right. love to hear your yeah. story.
Well, first, my gratitude to Mark and Fiona for sharing such powerful narratives. And I'm afraid that my narrative doesn't have the strong experiential component that theirs do, but perhaps that'll come in some unexpected way. I grew up in Western Massachusetts, the town of Amherst, and so Mormonism seemed to be a very distant and somewhat odd thing to me growing up. But I did have a family friend, Mario DePillis, who is a professor at University of Massachusetts and a good friend of my father's. And he was a scholar of Mormonism. And one day when I met him at one of my parents' cocktail parties, I asked him if he could tell me some more about Mormonism. And so he invited me over to dinner when I was a freshman in college. And we talked about the LDS tradition, and he shared his scholarship with me. And I became interested in Mormonism and things Mormon initially as a quintessentially American form of religiosity. But as my study of Mormonism deepened, I became more interested in Mormonism as a religion in its own right, as opposed to just seeing it as a kind of amalgam of American religious sensibilities. And as a Catholic, too, I recognize that many Latter-day Saints struggle with similar kinds of issues that Catholics do, whether it involves hierarchy or patriarchy or the overall issues of authority and obedience as, you know, real spiritual concerns and something that they have to work through. So I did feel a sense of kindred with Mormonism in a variety of ways, and also because I thought Catholicism and Mormonism also share similar kinds of riches. Most recently, I've become interested, for example, in how Mormon social thought can interact with Catholic social thought in particularly meaningful ways. And Dan, you will attest to this. I gave you a call after I read King Benjamin's sermon one day, and I was just yes. Really blown away by it, and you know, was able to reflect on it and see so many powerful intersections between its arguments and Mormon social ethics and Catholic social ethics. And as Mark was talking about just a few minutes ago, theosis, or the process of becoming divine, is actually something that is the tradition of thinking in those terms is being retrieved in Catholicism nowadays, as Mark mentioned, from the patristic tradition, so that there are interesting ways in which Mormonism has allowed me to discover aspects of the Catholic tradition that were hidden to me, or at least I wasn't familiar with. But it's also true, I think, that I really don't have a personal feel for Mormonism the way I would say for Hinduism, because I lived with a Hindu family for a number of years, or for Islam for that matter. So I still consider myself very much a student of Mormonism, and hopefully I'm an earnest student and a respectful one, but I'm still a student nonetheless.
Awesome. Do you want to talk any more about your Catholic family and upbringing and your own, you know, spiritual journey just in general
and that kind of part
of your life?
Yeah, I grew up in a very, very intellectually heavy Catholic environment. My mom was a cradle Catholic, French-Canadian Catholic, and my dad was a convert to Catholicism and also a college professor. And so much of the table discussion in my home had to do with Catholic encyclicals or Catholic theologians and so forth. And so Catholicism was very much something that was kind of in my head, I would think, more than it was in my body, to put it another way. I had a rather tumultuous few years in high school. And so I took a gap year where I worked for the Glen Mary Mission Organization in rural Oklahoma. And there I discovered a more popular form of Catholicism, one that was based on the rosary, devotions that Mark was talking about, that I found particularly compelling and moving to me personally. And as my faith journey developed, I had to struggle with a very severe problem with alcohol, and admitting that I was an alcoholic and having to surrender to that gave me a different sense of spirituality, not as much concerned with theological niceties or doctrine or orthodoxy in a narrow sense, but concerned with the spirit and how the spirit moves and how oftentimes we have to surrender to the spirit. And that the surrendering to the spirit, as both Mark and Fiona have talked about in different contexts, you know, is empowering. It gives new life, but it's also very, very painful. And so my interest in Mormonism and Catholicism is how they're both very powerful vehicles for self-transformation and for reimagining our relationship with God.
Wow. That is so powerful. Thank you for sharing that. Anybody, Fiona or Mark, any questions for Matt before we move on? Or
that was beautiful, Matt. Thank you. I mean, I would love to, if we have the time, I'd like to talk about the similarities between Catholicism and Mormonism. I do feel from my study together with my husband that Joseph was Catholic and was definitely moving in Catholic directions. We tend to think that Mormonism is a Protestant religion and it came out of the Protestant worldview. But in actual fact, when one looks at it closely, there are many more intersections between Catholicism and Mormonism than there are between Protestantism and Mormonism. And I'd love to go over some of those if the opportunity presents itself.
No, we can go there next. Mark, before we do, like, move into that area of similarities and differences and, you know, what you see because of the your relationship with the other tradition. Mark, anything more about Matt's journey or anything you'd like to query?
I was going to ask Matt if he had considered at any point in his life to enter the Catholic priesthood or to take on a monastic vows.
I did consider becoming a priest, and I think certainly in the Catholic environment that I grew up in, imagining oneself as a priest was a kind of natural extension of the culture. But I did seriously consider it, but not to the extent to which I actually investigated it seriously. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes in my idle moments, I'll think also too about monastic vows and how to a certain degree they would have suited me well. Unfortunately, my mm-hmm. mind can't stay very quiet, and so I'd have to do a lot of practice in order to be let in the door to begin with.
Yeah, a vow of silence would be tough too, right?
Yeah, it'd be real tough.
Well, Dan, my dear, it looks as though you are the odd man out in this group, because I had seriously contemplated the life of a nun. So all three of us have gone in that direction, and
well, I dated a girl very seriously. I chased her to Florida, even lived with her for a few months and things like this. And that was the big dilemma of her life, was to become a nun,
or
stay in Babylon with me.
So Dan, after After dating you, did she decide to?
Which way did you go, Dan?
Not that I know of. It seemed like we lost contact over kind of a 6-month fade out, and I never heard the final resolution. I did look her up on Facebook a few times over the last few years and just can't even find her, so maybe she is sister somebody somewhere, you know? So pretty funny. Anyway, well, thank you. Yeah, the odd man out. That's usual, my usual situation and everything else, but just teasing. Well, let's do some of this kind of stuff. Let's kind of go through anything that you guys just pick one or two and put them out there. You having this deep familiarity with both traditions, what does that raise in your mind as, you know, what's fruitful about that? In other words, because of this, I see XYZ in Mormonism differently, or I'm particularly attuned to this, or vice versa. Mm-hmm. I can go in any order. Do we want to keep going, Fiona, Mark, Matt, or...
Sounds good to me.
Fiona, do you have any thoughts first?
No, absolutely. Catholicism is has a very strong liturgical symbolic basis, and that is really not found in Mormonism, except in the temple, interestingly enough. And I remember my first temple experience was absolutely phenomenal. It was wonderful. It was as though I had returned to Catholicism. So I'd been worshiping in this rather ugly cinder block room attached to a basketball court, and then I was and then I was in the temple, and where liturgy and symbolism is of paramount importance, and I felt I had returned. I really did. And the emphasis in the temple on the crucifixion, I found particularly potent and powerful, and still do. And so that was glorious. Like we didn't have any incense burning, unfortunately, but it was a very powerful experience for me. I think, quite honestly, I was prepared for it because of my attendance at Mass. And in fact, we had a Sunday school lesson recently on how best to prepare to go to the temple. And I actually suggested that one should attend Mass 3 or 4 times before going to the temple, because Catholics do liturgy and symbolism extraordinarily well. And it was a wonderful preparation for me.
I bet that was the first time, Fiona, your Sunday school teacher ever heard that as a suggested
it was very interesting to see how it was received. You know, it was sort of that's Fiona, and then it was that's really, really odd. And then the other people sort of were entertaining the idea, rather novel. I'm not sure that anybody actually followed through, or will. It'd be actually interesting to see if anybody follows through, but I really do think it will help. I mean, I felt that I was like uber prepared for the temple because of Mass, because of the frequent prayers with the rosary at the center. It was. And then of course, Mormons don't emphasize crucifixion, really. You know, it's not really something that Mormons do. And so having that emphasized in the temple was just brilliant. It was like, okay, this is really what it's all about. So that's how I thought. It was fabulous, fabulous.
Well, that is neat, because probably 95% of Mormons who don't have a background in something like that, it takes quite a while for them to get rid of the strangeness of the temple. You know what I mean? Because it is so different. So what a wonderful blessing to be able to kind of like it right off the bat.
Yeah,
I think everyone likes it, and you certainly feel certain things, I think, for most of us in the temple, but to actually feel comfortable in the liturgy and the high ritual elements. Mark, is that something similar to you on that? I mean, pick your own thing to make a comparison about.
Sure.
Did that aid your enjoyment of the temple early on?
Well, you know, I like how Fiona described that. I think particularly in my studies since I've become a Latter-day Saint, I've seen and experienced the Holy Temple as a way to enter God's presence and commune with God And if you look at the Catholic Mass, it is all about communion. I mean, it is coming from the world. You come in and you anoint yourself with holy water, the sign of the cross, and you shed the world and you come in, all for the aim, if you will, to sacrifice at the altar and to commune with the presence of Christ in the Eucharist, in the host, to commune with God. And using that description, that is very similar to what we practice in the Holy Temple. It is coming into God's presence through symbolic ways. And I think that's beautiful, Fiona. I like how you've shared that. I guess I would add.
Let me ask a question before you move on. Matt and Mark, tell me, is that language that you guys pick up as youngsters, that this is about communion and all the ways you just described it, Mark, or is that something that it takes a mature, you know, somebody who's maybe even done a little comparative work to get language like that? Mm-hmm. Or is that sort of part of the catechism, that the purpose of the Mass is communion, et cetera?
Well, I'll let Matt, I'll just give you a short thought, then I'd like to hear from Matt on that. But when I was I'm trying to remember, 8 or 9 years old, on April 9th, I think it was 8, I went through my first Holy Communion. And it's called communion for a reason. It's, you know, it's taught that you commune with God as you...
Okay.
What would you say to that, Matt?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, of course, it was brought up, or I was told it was communion, but it was always something really shocking to me, the idea that we were consuming the body and blood of Jesus Christ. And I think, you know, for Catholics, sometimes there is this disposition that's created through participation in the liturgy and so forth, but it does take some time to give language to it. And so thinking about communion as not just eating Jesus's flesh, but actually kind of merging or sharing essences with God, I think sometimes takes a while. Certainly, you know, when I was growing up and I was instructed, we often didn't move to levels of high abstraction when it came to talking about our own religious experience. So, but I do think Catholics do bring this sense of close proximity to God with them, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. Even if they can't articulate it, perhaps in a kind of theoretic way.
I would agree. In fact, as I was taught as a young Catholic, there was this sense of awe about the Eucharist. I mean, the bells ring and the priest, it's very ceremoniously done, and it's only consecrated by someone who's ordained. And so there's this sense of awe that I think is lost in Protestant faith, and probably Fiona would agree with that. I think the Catholics taught me a sense of awe and a sense of reverence and a sense of submission of self. And the sacraments, I think, were particularly instructive for that with me, and of course the Mass, to give this sense of awe that God has power, and that power, we can partake of that even in a small way through our participation in the seven sacraments. You know, I think that was what I learned as a Catholic, which I think was I think it's instructed me and has helped me grow in my experience as a Latter-day Saint.
I think that's so interesting because this is exactly what Joseph was doing. Joseph, going in an opposite direction from Protestantism, Joseph was adding more sacraments to the Catholic sacraments. So he was increasing the number of sacraments, which I find really, really interesting. And then also, you know, as we were talking about the temple, Catholics have long held that there's an intimate connection between the living and the dead. I remember attending Masses for the Dead, and that we have an interest in and an ability to influence each other which of course is probably the primary purpose of the temple, is this, you know, this binding, this feeling of the entire human family to each other and to God. So when, you know, this idea of the saviors on Mount Zion, that one definitely can help those, the sort of the Mormons have become sort of the contemporary Sadducees. You know, they are the guardians of the temple. They stand at the portal between heaven and earth and issuing every nation, tongue, you know, kindred, tongue, people through that portal, through the torn flesh of Christ into the celestial kingdom, which is really lovely and I think so inherently Catholic. So, like, we've become, I don't know, I think Mormons are even more Catholic than Catholic in many ways.
Interesting. You know, let me add one other comment. I think we forget that the Mormon Tabernacle Choir performs Catholic masses quite often through, you know, Mozart's Requiem, Forays, and Durafle. I mean, we as Latter-day Saints, we love Requiem masses. I mean, you know, the beautiful portrayal.
Interesting. Yeah. Now, I was curious a little bit because you guys started to tie the mass to the temple. There's something about sacred space that I think is going on when we talk about the temple and the cathedral. Catholic churches are genuinely quite impressive compared to Mormon meeting houses, right? Is there something about sacred space that plays into this for you guys?
No, I would agree. I would not call that sacred space. I would call the temple sacred space, and I would call cathedral sacred space, definitely, when I enter. And I don't know whether it's me, but I'm not really good with contemporary Catholic churches. So I'm so used to going into churches and cathedrals that are hundreds and hundreds of years old, and there's something about that that I feel... I must say, I feel the spirit very, very strongly when I go into this lovely little church in Chelsea. Just this feeling of the communion of saints that has continued without interruption for hundreds and hundreds of years. I feel when I am there that I am part of something huge, something universal, something moving forward to some grand conclusion. I think we could create sacred space in our meeting houses. I think some stained glass would be really lovely. We could go, you know, impressionistic, like Matisse, you know, but I think the dearth, quite honestly, and this is just myself speaking, I think the dearth of beauty, in our meeting room of our worship, actually, in my opinion, hinders the spirit. I think the spirit would find the atmosphere much more amenable if there were some architectural or other beauty. I have the three together: goodness, beauty, and truth. And I think when you combine all three, then you have a much more powerful catalyst for spiritual experience.
Matt, tell me about contemporary Catholic churches. Nobody's building big, or they're just these modern ones that she's talking about?
For the most part, though, there is, at least in the last couple of years, there's been a rise in Catholic traditionalism. And so to that extent, we'll probably see more traditional models come out. But I really do feel a kind of experiential gap or chasm even, because I haven't really experienced the rhythms of LDS life nearly to the extent that obviously Mark and Fiona have experienced the rhythms of Catholic life. And so when I look at Mormonism and Catholicism, I tend to focus much more on issues like authority and obedience, interestingly enough, because where I'm situated, basically, not only in terms of my teaching and scholarship, but also in my work with the media, most of the time I tend to be commenting on Mormon stereotypes or trying to combat Mormon stereotypes. And they don't ask a Mormon to combat Mormon stereotypes. They ask the Catholic to do that. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that obviously is said about Mormons and also Catholics, to a certain degree, is that that they both leave their intellects at the door, whether they go into the temple, the meeting house, or the cathedral. And they do so because there's such a heavy emphasis on authority and obedience in both traditions. And I'm particularly interested how both Catholics and Mormons negotiate issues of authority and obedience in a variety of different ways. And that when you look at the spiritual life of members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints or Catholics, there are a whole variety of responses and ways in which the intellect is both celebrated but also disciplined in some ways. And it resists, I think, the stereotypical characterization of either tradition being anti-intellectual, at least in terms of the way it's practiced or the way in which it, or the demands that it places on its followers. So I'm particularly interested then in how Mormons and Catholics can dialogue about how they work through the various requirements of obedience and authority, and also how they push back against them, because clearly Catholics do and Mormons do as well. And so I think that there's an interesting discussion to be had about how our spiritual lives are defined and how the intellect relates to them.
I think that's one of the pluses of Mormonism, is that we are a young religion and our theology is still evolving. So we don't have that, you know, that really strong impression of, you know, hundreds of years of, you know, this is how it is. So with the authority thing, you know, and priesthood, my feeling is that we are still evolving. Joseph made it very clear that, and I think this is one of the things that he did was not only fracture the canon, but then ensure that it couldn't be closed by saying things like, you know, I've built the foundation, you are to build on it. And so, you know, I think there is a lot of room to move in Mormon theology in these areas of authority and priesthood. And I find it very intriguing. And, you know, I had a very close friend of mine who is Catholic and a nun. And she had a crisis of faith when Pope Benedict put into the category of pedophilia those women who sought for the priesthood. And so when I'm talking with my Mormon sisters, I'm saying, look, you know, it could be worse. But I think because Mormonism is so young and the theology has not yet been canonized, it's still fluid, it's still open, there are still open-ended questions that need to be answered, that we're still moving to develop a theology, and that therefore leaves us much more open to innovation, which may be more difficult for Catholicism.
Would the average experience of someone in a Mormon ward be of innovation or an openness to innovation theologically, do you think?
Oh, that's an excellent question. And no, I think you're right. No, I don't think it would be. I mean, Carol and I talk to people who are really concerned about their inability to be able to address issues that are really important to their lives in the ward meeting house space. So I think it's very difficult. On the other hand, I really do feel that Mormonism is in this process of transition, and so as greater concerns are being raised about the inability to be able to discuss issues that are much more profound than what is disseminated in the current Sunday book curricula, for example, I think we are moving towards embracing a much more open, at least I'm optimistic that we are, from mm-hmm. what I am seeing, that this idea of inclusion, I think, is becoming really, really important to Mormons, and how do we keep this a big tent church, if that's the way we're going, and as we're, you know, sort of a universally proselytizing church, then mm-hmm. we really need to be more open to different cultural aspects and all of that sort of thing, so, or we will remain closed, and that would be unfortunate.
My experience, thank you, Fiona and Matt. I guess I've seen in my study of Mormonism before I became a Latter-day Saint, I'm aware that prior to what Mormons call the centralization of doctrine and teachings. What's the
correlation?
Correlation. There you go. Prior to correlation. So in other words, there was more of an experience among members of more acceptance of divergent views, and that you would even during Sunday school or priesthood meetings, you would discuss and share even contrary views about doctrine. But I think as the church through correlation has established, and it's actually, if you look at any organization that's become worldwide, it has to come to grips with centralization and management of its message or of processes. And I think the LDS Church has kind of hunkered down during the time of correlation. And now we've got the internet coming and ideas are being shared and there's more exchange of divergent views. I think maybe the pendulum is swinging so that there is greater acceptance among Latter-day Saints. At least I know in my own congregation, there are divergent views. I don't know that they're always vocalized, but because of, I think, the feeling that many have of the need to conform. But I know that there are discussions and groups that get together that are not frowned upon. For example, in my ward, we have our ward church yoga practice on Wednesday mornings. And, you know, a lot of the people who want to learn yoga, they come and learn yoga. And it's in the ward house. And I thought that I would have had to die and go to heaven to experience a yoga in a Latter-day Saint meeting house. But you know, I think like Fiona said, I think we're learning. I just attended a workshop on Saturday where it was kind of promoted to Mormon meditators, people who practice mindfulness and meditation. From a Mormon standpoint, I know M. Catherine Thomas, who's a Latter-day Saint writer, and others include a lot of non-LDS ideas in their books. You've got also President Dieter M. F. Uchtdorf talking about, and you hear in General Conference, people quoting non-LDS authors and idea promoters, I think more regularly than in the past.
I absolutely agree. I have a feeling that it's sort of like reclamation, and I think Catholicism is doing the same thing. But for Mormons, there's a lot of historical precedent. For example, race and priesthood. Once the historical precedent is met and understood, then change can be made, and so correct me if I'm wrong, but early Catholicism embraced this idea of a vulnerable God. You can see it particularly in Origen, and I'm wondering, mm-hmm. if that's coming back, you know, because you know Origen actually, you know, it was absolutely beautiful. I've written it down somewhere. If I can find it, I would love to share it. But I love Origen. I think Origen rocks all together. But it's interesting how closely his theology mirrors Mormon theology, especially on the nature of God. So this is absolutely lovely. The Father too, himself, the God of the universe, patient and abounding in mercy and compassionate. Does he not in some way suffer? Or do you not know that when he directs human affairs, he suffers human suffering? You know, that's so Jacob 5, Moses 7. And it's just lovely. So I see this idea of those traditions beginning to reclaim the things that they held dear at the very beginning. And I think this is what actually is the impetus behind this more universal aspect that we are seeing in Mormonism, because as we go back to the founding father of Mormonism, we recognize how magnanimous and how universal his mind was. And in our sacred text, we are encouraged to read good books, and that means anything but the sacred text, and study about cultures, languages, histories. I mean, even in our sacred text, we are being encouraged to develop, quite frankly, a much more magnanimous and universal outlook. We are all children of our Heavenly Father, and we should be involved in building bridges. I think that's at the basis of this. And you know, coming out of their self-imposed exile, and that's taken a little while to, you know, sort of become comfortable with American culture, particularly. And now they've become comfortable. They're not sure comfortable, but I think there is this, you know, moving back towards the roots of Mormonism and recognizing how magnanimously universal it is, and therefore we do need to be inculcating all of these truths from various other faith traditions, well, all other faith traditions, as a matter of fact. But I love that idea of reclamation, and I really feel whether it is acknowledged or not, or apprehended or not, I think that is the impetus behind this movement towards this greater acceptance of other mm-hmm. cultures' beliefs within and without the faith.
Well said.
Thanks. Mark, let me ask you quickly. I kind of think we were mostly responding to Fiona's early one about the ritual and temple stuff. What is it in your Mormonism today that you see in a fresh or richer way because of your Catholic experience?
I think one thing that has enriched my Mormon experience because of my Catholic background are what I would call devotional practices. I mean, as a Catholic boy, I remember being instructed by my mother to, before I went to bed, I would read from the Bible, and I would actually kiss the Bible with my lips and then open it up and read. And I remember, attending the Rosary and novenas and stations of the cross, there was this sense of oneness with God when I practiced these devotional practices. And I like the word devotional because it's something one has to devote oneself to. And I think of devotion with, my wife, the love that I have for her and the fidelity. I learned that devotion to God through my Catholic upbringing and the devotional practices.
So how is that enlivening something in Mormonism that maybe a lot of us don't take a devotional attitude towards?
Wow.
That maybe you do. Is that what you're saying? Or it's almost like in some ways you're on the border of here of perhaps holy envy. In other words, you liked it in Catholicism, but I want to know, has it transferred into Mormonism for you?
Wow. I sit here shaking my head. I think it's the spirit of how do I say, it's the opposite of casualness. I think you talked about it when you talk about sacred space. I think devotional practices for me, not only sacred space, but sacred time. I have learned to have a sacred time of the day. In fact, I remember even as a Catholic being taught that when I prayed toward the tabernacle where the host had been consecrated. So I would point my knees in a way so that I would be pointing toward the church. Now, I don't know if this was extreme, but I was taught that that you pray in a devotional way to the presence of God. And so it's funny, but when I pray at night, I make sure that I pray toward the temple.
Interesting.
I point my knees, and wherever I am, I find a spot that points me toward the temple. And it can be kind of scattywampus, wherever I am in the room, but it's toward the temple. And so I think there's a sense of sacred space and sacred time that I learned as a Catholic young man that I've carried on, and it deepens my connection to God.
Nate. Wow, wonderful. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Matt, you mentioned authority and obedience as something that's highlighted between this comparative enterprise. Anything else that you wanted to just raise?
Yeah, I hope I'm not going to cross over into stereotypes here, but I'll just tell you briefly the story of my first visit to BYU. I went to give a paper for a conference. And this is about 10 years ago. And I remember being welcomed and, you know, how everything was all very professionally done. And I remember also being very nervous about giving my paper. And so this is at the law school at BYU. And so I went to the room where I was going to give my paper and so forth. And a total of four people had shown up to see my paper, to hear me talk. So it must have been the least well-attended presentation at the whole conference. But in any case, the person who introduced me was a professor at BYU Law School, and he had actually done a lot of homework on me, and so most of the time was taken up by him introducing me to the four people who probably knew me to begin with, who were listening to me. And my whole experience at BYU was one of tremendous hospitality and a sense of how any kind of interaction, you know, whether it be professional, whether it be religious, whether it be interpersonal, had meaning. And again, I don't want to stereotype here, because obviously the stereotype of Mormons is that they're always friendly, you know, and they have this missionary zeal and so forth. But I really did have a sense with my Mormon colleagues at that conference that there was an appreciation for the moment and being in the moment, and also giving witness to the faith in the moment. And I would say within Catholicism, for example, you know, I do not find very many Catholics thinking, for example, of how to be hospitable to people who show up at Mass. I mean, my wife is Lutheran, for example, and there was never any kind of effort to engage her to make non-Catholics feel comfortable. Likewise, I think very many Catholics tend to think in terms of them not giving witness to the faith in their normal everyday human interactions. You know, in one sense, I mean, I guess it can be overbearing to refer to one's faith all the time when you're with someone. But in another sense, there's a kind of openness and hospitality that reflects our faith commitments that I think Catholics have not cultivated the way in which they should. And so I think it's my small and limited experiences in Mormon community, I think, have shown me areas where Catholicism, which also has a very strong sense of community, perhaps doesn't have as nuanced a view of what that community can mean.
That's really interesting. Wow, thanks for sharing that. And when you mentioned about it's this tendency within Mormonism to be more open to sharing their faith or speaking aloud their witness or something like that, we know that we have a missionary emphasis within Mormonism that perhaps, I know there's Catholic missions, but they tend to be more feed the poor, you know, clothe the naked kind of things, right?
Right.
There's not a lot of proselytizing other than, you know, when you're serving, certainly people will be attracted to the faith.
You know, Dan, I will challenge that. A father by the name of Father Robert Barron, who he has a PBS show that's been on called Catholicism. He came and spoke at the Cathedral of the Madeleine, and he spoke of the new evangelism, bringing Christ to a secular world. And I attended his presentation. It was wonderful. In fact, it was just very inspiring. And he speaks about this new evangelism within Catholicism to put the faith into action and to to bring, you know, to bring Christ to the world.
But is it seeking converts for Catholicism?
I don't know. My impression is that it's to bring Christ to the world.
Well, my understanding of it is that ideally that's what it's supposed to be, but in a lot of contexts it becomes a way of doing battle with the secular world. And I think that's something that both Mormons and Catholics too have tried to work through in a variety of ways. I mean, how to come to terms with, or how to transform, how to participate in a society that's becoming overwhelmingly secular. And I think there are various ways in which both Mormonism and Catholicism have been successful in doing that, and other ways perhaps where they're challenged. And, that's also, I think, a very interesting avenue of dialogue. I mean, how both traditions that have very strong senses of identity position themselves vis-a-vis the surrounding culture.
No kidding. Yeah, definitely. Now, I was actually going one more little spot with my comment, and that was, Matt, we talked about the comfort that Mormons seem to have about sharing their faith or expressing it. We have this monthly fast and testimony meeting, and there's lots of encouragement for parents and grandparents and children, just whatever setting you're in, and a teaching moment arises or something, that you do kind of express your witness, your testimony type thing. And when we were sitting around the table at a reception at this conference last week, you kind of said, Dan, how would my Catholic kids go about asking a Mormon to share their witness with them? Mm-hmm. And it was an interesting thing. And I guess my question is for you, is that an emphasis at all within Catholicism that you take pretty much regular opportunities to say, this is how my Catholicism shapes my life in positive ways?
Well, Catholicism has many different styles, and so there are certain Pentecostal styles of Catholicism where you would have that, and I've personally been drawn to those. But in your ordinary Sunday parish, I mean, religion is considered to be such a kind of personal thing. It's communal, but our sense of our relationship with God is intensely personal, and confession is always done with a priest and in private and so forth. There is a sense of a boundedness, I think, about talking about one's faith that you wouldn't find in Mormonism or evangelical Protestantism.
Oh, neat. Mark or Fiona, anything on that particular aspect of it? Did you notice that as a shift from Catholicism to Mormonism, maybe?
Well, what I noticed was the sense of community. And I agree with Mark. I didn't feel that in the Catholic service. In fact, there wasn't really a sense of community. There was sort of the idea that one is coming to worship. Just thinking of my own congregation, you're talking about this hospitality, but I do think there is something deeper than proselytizing. Maybe it's part of it. I'm not entirely sure, but Tara and I are absent from our congregation a considerable part of the year. Yet whenever we return, I just feel this sense of love, this outpouring of love and welcome, and it's genuine and sincere. And there's certainly no evangelizing going on there, but it's really, and I'm wondering if it isn't because of the Mormon emphasis on service within and with outside, within and without the community. In my own life, there have been periods where young women with children have sacrificed a great deal in order to help me out of a particular bind, and those sort of things actually do bind. This idea of you are your brother's keeper, and the calls that go out for help to members of the community and also members outside of the community, I think it's very strong. I think it's a very deep stream that flows through Mormonism, and I think it's one of its most attractive qualities.
Interesting. Now, Matt, is there a possibility that some of this social stuff that we're maybe talking about maybe goes on within the unique Mormon ward or something? Do you think it's because of our longer services, the fact that we have Sunday schools together, that we have organized work projects and all sorts of things? Or are some Catholics working on creating that greater sense of community for each other?
Yeah, I think, you know, it varies, obviously. And I, you know, don't want to stereotype Catholics either. But I think, at least from a Catholic perspective, the Mormon community is much more highly structured, okay? And that's sort of a double-edged sword, I would think, you know. I mean, one way Catholicism was characterized by a friend of mine is it's like a house with a stern father and a permissive mother, and both parents don't know what the kids are doing. And so, you know, there's all this stuff going on in Catholicism and so forth. Without a great deal of supervision, and at least the perception of the typical Mormon ward is that it's very supportive, it's very, very loving, but it can also be insular in some ways.
Yes.
Or perhaps so highly structured that some people might find their own creativity circumscribed in some ways. And so right. I think, you know, for your last question was about holy envy. I think when Catholics look at the LDS Church, I mean, they sort of look at it through a Catholic lens and see a community that's highly functional and highly supportive and loving in not just general ways, but in very specific ways, but also that can be limiting in a way that actually, interestingly enough, some Catholics might feel uncomfortable with. You know, whether that perception is accurate, you know, it's not for me to say, but I think a lot of the holy envy from the Catholic side regarding the LDS tradition has to do with this sense of community and how powerfully it's expressed within Mormonism.
Hmm. Yeah, my experience, I think it was almost like night and day, even though I was an active Catholic as a lector and other opportunities to serve as a college student, I found that the invitation to have a calling in a LDS congregation or ward was a different, it was kind of, oh, wow, you mean we serve each other as home teachers and have a calling where that is kind of an organized way to take care of each other. I was impressed. I think that's the kind of the network of callings, I think, is in a lot of ways the social glue that keeps Latter-day Saints together, how we serve one another in our callings. And yet it can, as you say, create kind of an insulation or a way of keeping us from seeing the person across the street who we don't have a calling for, but they may be in need. We never see them because they're not on our stewardship home teaching list, you know.
Interesting. Great stuff. Fiona, anything in that area of either holy envy, something that your Catholicism has made you long for it in Mormonism, or just anything in that area?
Well, yes, I think I've always been longing for Catholicism and Mormonism, and I found it in the temple. But that being said, in my study over the last few years, I am seeing really serious connections between Catholicism and Mormonism, as far as theology goes. And of course, you know, it was just such a glorious moment when I read Joseph's last sermon, the sermon he gave before he died. And he said, the old Catholic Church is worth more than all. Well, as a Catholic, you know, I've got to say that was a moment of pure rejoicing for me. And I do see, a lot of links, even deeper than similarities, like theological compatibility between Mormon thought and Catholic thought. And, you know, just looking at the Apostles' Creed, Mormons could recite that. I think we might quibble over hell, but quite honestly, we just call it another name, Christ descending into hell. But everything in the Apostles' Creed a Mormon would not have any problem saying, reciting also. So that has been wonderful for me. I was just listening to Mark, and I remember, just the reverence with which the priest kisses the sacred text before reading it. And I have a rosary, and I use that often in my prayers. I don't pray the rosary, but I find that it helps me to focus on my devotional prayer, and I find that I am incorporating into my devotionals, and in fact, both Terrell and myself have gone back to this. We set aside and we're lucky now, we're empty nesters, so we do have discretionary time. But I'm using George MacDonald, his Unspoken Sermons. I find him so, the things that he says so very resonant in so many ways, for my devotionals and hymns, and we listen to Gregorian chant on Sunday. So, I find that I can move very comfortably between the two traditions. And when I attend Mass, when I'm in England, I feel so comfortable there. I feel at home. I feel at home in my ward, in the States. So I think I've come to a point in my life where I feel that I am truly a member of both traditions, and that for me, where I have felt this sense of loss for such a long period of the aesthetic beauty and the devotion of Catholicism, I feel that it has been returned. So I feel that I belong to both worlds, and that for me is incredibly empowering and liberating in a spiritual way.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
Mark, what would you say is missing from Mormon life that gives you a little holy envy for Catholicism again?
I still and have at times gone to midnight mass on the eve of Christmas morning.
Yeah, sure.
There's nothing like a high mass, and I think along with that.
And even just the attunement to the holy calendar.
Exactly.
The Christian calendar.
I love Lent. I mean, it's hard. I don't know that we have a Mormon equivalent of Lent, or particularly Easter week or Holy Week. I still remember very fondly on Palm Sunday carrying palms home that had been blessed and then using them to adorn religious pictures at home. There's a sense of specialness of holy days and seasons, I think, that I miss. I also miss, in some ways, the sense of relics. We talked about sacred space and sacred time. I think there's a sacredness of physicality. And I think I have some envy for that. I think we're at times fairly casual in our practices as Latter-day Saints, and so I don't know that I would make everything relics that is practiced in the Catholic Church, but I think this sense of, as I said before, awe or sacred times and places and things. I think that that I at times miss that.
Neat. Thank you so much. Matt, we kind of started with you, I guess, in this holy envy area, or at least you raised it. Is there anything else particular that you haven't mentioned?
Well, if I wanted to just springboard off this notion of physicality and relics and maybe simply ask this, one of the most powerful experiences I've had actually was going to the Church History Museum and seeing two artifacts. One was a lock of Brigham Young's hair, and the other was David O. McKay's white suit. And for me as a Catholic, looking at those, physical, something physically connected to both Brigham Young and David O. McKay was something very, very powerful. And I'm wondering if Latter-day Saints would feel the same kind of sense of connection. I mean, beyond simply personal, but this notion of physicality, of being sanctified in some way.
Interesting. Well, you know, Joseph Smith in Nauvoo blessed a handkerchief, I guess, that he gave to, was it Wilfred Woodruff? And that handkerchief was used then to bless the sick who had experienced, I think, cholera or some other disease of the swamp there. So, you know, it's interesting. We do have a sense of sacredness of things.
It's like I said, you know, Joseph was Catholic. Prove him controversial. but I think what I have missed is the cross. Because as a young girl, I always wore the cross, and unfortunately, in Mormonism, it underwent. I think it was, quite frankly, I think it was a sort of a cultural anti-Catholic sentiment that dominated. Right. But it's very interesting when one, and this is Michael Reed wrote this brilliant book entitled Banishing the Cross, A New Mormon Taboo. And he has pictures of, you know, Brigham Young's wives and daughters, and the cross is prominent. Cross earrings, they're wearing large crosses. And so you know, that rather emboldened me. It's like, okay, this is part and parcel of Mormonism. In fact, there was a suggestion made to erect a cross in Utah to celebrate, because the first people who'd actually brought the gospel into that area of the country were Catholic priests. And it is a universal, for me, it's a very powerful universal symbolism of Christ and Christianity. And so it was lovely. So I brought out my cross and I am wearing it. And I love that connect. Again, it's a physical, you know, we're talking about the physicality. For me, it's a very important reminder of Christ and of Christ's centrality in both traditions. And it gives me an opportunity, you know, when people ask, so is that interesting? Because I designed this particular cross. It has the cross in the background, and it has Easter lily on front, so on the top. So it's a combination of crucifixion and resurrection. One can't really have one without the other. And so it has provided a focus, or, you know, lots of conversation about Christ and Christianity and Mormonism. But I love wearing it. It reminds me that the primary reason I moved to Mormonism was the centrality of Christ that I felt was in that tradition, and so it's so lovely to be able to bring it back and wear it.
Neat. I didn't know that. That's neat that you're doing that.
Oh.
Yeah, I think Michael Reed's work has helped. Bob Reese has been working on, you know, let's get this taboo of the cross away. I think we're starting to see, you know, less, you know, Mormonism used to say, well, we focus on the Garden of Gethsemane part of the atonement rather than the death, you know, on the cross and things like that. And I think we're starting to kind of, like you say, move out of that kind of knee-jerk anti-Catholic. I think you're right. That's where we were when we started going down the path that kind of let the cross get out of our consciousness. So that's my thought anyway. Well, you guys, I appreciate this so much. I promised you about an hour and a half, and that's where we're at. Would you guys, if you could all compose like a closing thought, I guess it could be anything else that you wanted to bring up that you didn't, but just, I would love anything that just is a final minute or two on being blessed by having, you know, really entered into two traditions, sort of more of a nod towards what this series is going to be. Why are you just, even if it's not the specifics about these two traditions, just how is it that you're, you know, is there anything that you can speak of that you normally wouldn't phrase in normal conversation that occurs to you about having two homes, or at least two strong interests where you have sympathy and empathy for two? Does anyone want to start?
I'll start as a Catholic.
Thanks, Matt.
I would just say this, that, you know, I've been blessed to have studied in a number of different environments with Muslims, with Hindus, with Buddhists, and so forth. But it is the truth that no group of scholars has been more open and more welcoming to me than Mormon scholars have been. And I don't bring any special academic expertise into my discussion of the LDS tradition, at least not at this point. But I do bring an openness and sincere interest. And to have that welcomed and nurtured has been an incredibly transformative experience for me. Not just, interestingly enough, a religiously transformative experience, but a professionally transformative experience, because I think academics in particular is a profession that's in real need of love and openness. And I've appreciated the love and openness that my Mormon friends and colleagues have given me. And for that, I am truly, truly grateful.
Thank you, brother. And every time I've heard you speak four or five times to our groups, and you always enrich us so much with what you see, the questions you ask, your personality, everything about you is just a great blessing to us. And thank you for sharing yourself on this podcast too.
Yeah, great.
Well, I think I'll go next.
All right.
You know, I like what Matt said in terms of how he feels blessed, because I think those are my words as well. I feel very blessed to have been raised in a Roman Catholic home and community and congregation. I learned to experience God in a very personal way. And I feel that my Latter-day Saint practice and the faith that I've embraced at a young adult age has built on that. But I would join with Fiona. I still feel fluent in my Catholic language and enjoy the symbols of how those of the Catholic tradition experience God. I can still find God in many, if not most, of those symbols and those practices. So I kind of look at it in terms of, so I served a mission as well for the LDS Church in Finland. And I think of, so I speak Finnish, right? So I think of Catholicism as another language that I can approach God and one another, others in, share a sense a shared understanding. So I like that model of kind of being fluent in two faiths. And I hope, you know, as I grow older, that I can become fluent like Matt, you know, as he's worshipped with Hindus and Buddhists. I would like to become fluent in other faiths as well. I perhaps not as much in my background and formative years as Catholicism was, but I hope to become fluent in other faiths as well.
Yeah, there's just nothing like entering into a world, another worldview, and looking around and, you know, getting past the strangeness to where you can see why this is an attractive, you know, way of putting the world together. Mm-hmm. And with this principle and that principle and this principle, this does naturally follow. And I can see a richness there. And so I agree with you, whether it's a full immersion or just reading and just imagining, you know, that life from inside the other is such a wonderful experience.
Good way to put it.
Thank you, Mark, for being with us. Mm-hmm. Appreciate you so much, brother.
My pleasure.
Fiona, any final thoughts from you on this dual nature?
I just say amen to the two lovely brethren with whom I have had the privilege to speak this evening. I have been writing notes, gentlemen, as you have spoken. I've just learned so much. It's been so incredibly enriching. Thank you. I'm deeply grateful for this wonderful conversation. For me, I think Catholicism prepared me for Mormonism. Catholicism gave me a universal Weltanschauung, as it were, and helped me to appreciate the boldness of Joseph's enterprise. And we haven't discussed this, but it's, as a woman, for me, this reclamation of the feminine divine that Joseph declared and Eliza canonized, canonized in her hymn, My Father, that we have a Heavenly Mother. And so I've spent the last several years immersed in this wonderful new academic tradition of finding the feminine divine within and without side the canon. And it is terribly exciting, but it's so lovely, you know, for me to think that in, you know, 1830, mid-19th century, Joseph was saying that there is a mother in heaven together with a father. And so for Mormonism, it's sort of a given. And now the work, of course, is to identify her. But that has been just such a satisfying, wonderfully enriching part of my life as I have, as I've read these scholars' texts on Asherah and her role within the Hebrew canon, between the Hebrew, within the Hebrew tradition prior to the Babylonian captivity. So I just feel that my world has been enriched beyond measure because of my association and my affiliation and my membership in both faith traditions, and it gives it, you know, sort of this quest. There is more to learn. There is more there, out there, and this ability to theosis, the idea that we are God's children, that God has the capacity and the desire to save the entire human family, it's just a wonderful tenet. You know, I'm universalist deep down, and to hear Joseph reclaim and reiterate that perspective has really helped me. But it really is, I think, the vision given me by the combined participation in both of these particular faith traditions that have really enriched my life.
Awesome. You know, and it, when you all have been talking here, I thought of like, oh, here's like four areas that we didn't cover. Fiona, for instance, I'd heard you talk before about, you know, Catholicism and just having a other institution, and you can see how every institution has its flaws, and any institution that overclaims, you know that they're moving into a difficult area. And then also we could have talked a bit about the divine feminine in both, and talked about Mary and her role, and as well as the Catholic saints that are women, and we could have talked about that. There were a couple other things about authority. Matt, you kind of mentioned it earlier, authority and obedience, but we didn't really talk about priesthood and that idea of, you know, having to have this authority transmuted through, you know, the laying on of hands or this direct line and, you know, priesthood claims of lineage and all that kinds of stuff. So we just barely scratched the surface. So listeners, what I'm basically saying here is, come with all the issues that you wanted us to talk about that we didn't. And let's have a great discussion online at the Mormon Matters blog. I would appreciate this. So anybody who's had a strong interest in any of this stuff, I'll try to join in the conversation, and I'll catch these guys with an email or something if they're not weighing in regularly on the blog, just to see if they'll poke their head around and come engage you. So thank you again, you guys. I've loved this. I appreciate you so much giving me a couple hours here on a Monday night, and just consider y'all great friends and wonderful spiritual mentors to me in so many ways.
It's been a pleasure. Mm-hmm.
Listeners, please come to the website, share your comments, share your things. Please continue to donate to Mormon Matters. It's super, super helpful when you do share. Let's just continue our journeys as co-travelers, and it's thrilled to be with you, and I wish everybody good night. Cue the music.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Matters Podcast. To discuss this podcast with others, please check us out at mormonmatters.org. Keep this podcast alive, or to join our support community, please consider a tax-deductible donation today at mormonmatters.org. Music for this podcast was brought to you by Brittany and Clayton Pixton. The Mormon Matters logo was generously provided by StudioCase.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you.
as well.